Well, hello, Frank. How are you?
I'm okay.
These are crazy times, huh?
Oh, yeah. It's mad.
What do you think about what happened in the markets today?
Well, I mean, it's just, a little bit knee-jerk reaction. I mean, they're just a little bit responding. They're hoping that the Congress will approve the package eventually and everything will be hunky-dory. That's what they think, you know.
So,
but obviously, they're missing the point, of course.
Yesterday's stock market fall was widely blamed on the failure of the package. You accept that explanation?
Well, I mean, there's always some reaction. I mean, people sort of responding, but it's got, you know, that's got nothing to do as such with the package or anything like that. I mean, the market basically, not always, but over time reflects the facts of reality, and the facts of reality are that the real economy in America was badly damaged by reckless policies, fiscal and monetary policies over many years, and now it's sort of a payoff time, so to speak. You know, and on a daily basis, we cannot predict what may happen, but over time, you know, we can say that the market is going to reflect the real facts, and the real facts are not very good.
You've been a great prophet of this all along, writing for years on the Mises site, getting the timing down almost exactly right. I mean, quite often you send articles in, and then suddenly the next week the very topic will be in the headlines. You saw this one coming, huh?
Yeah, look, you know, I mean, it's not only myself. Many practitioners in this game, I mean, will follow Mises, I would say, and or sort of a small commonsensical approach, would have seen it, that things are going to come, because you cannot have indefinite bull market which is fed by such a crazy loose monetary policies, you know, that and eventually the bus had to come, and that's what we see right now.
When do you date the exact loose monetary policies and then the tightening that precipitated the disaster?
Well, I basically think that the problem started first of all with 2001, when Mr. Greenspan started to loosen its monetary stance, its interest rate stance. They lowered interest rate from 6% in January 2001. To 1% by June 2003, and then they kept at this level until June 2004. And thereafter, they basically were moving by baby steps. They started to tighten by 0.25%. So we had and they raised basically the rates by September. We already had 2007. We had 5.25%. The point is that when they have lowered interest rates to such an extent, from 6% to 1%. It has given a foundation platform for various activities, which I call them bubble activities, which they shouldn't be there. And that's really manifested in real estate boom and everywhere, in fact, we got them. And the money supply, doesn't matter how you measure. For instance, if you measure in terms of the way I look at it, so-called AMS, Austrian AMS, for instance, you know, it's jumped from a slight negative we had in early 2001, it basically reached at one stage almost 9% by 2006, and it sort of stood at this level for quite some time. So this is quite a massive increase. Now, we had, as Mises would say, quite significant misallocation of resources, squandering of real resources from good activities towards bad activities, so to speak, that market would not promote. And right now we are in the midst of the effect of the tighter stance, which Fed Greenspan introduced in June 2006. Again, I'm saying by baby steps. And so from 1% to 5.25%, it doesn't matter how small the steps are, you're going to strangle all those activities that false activities or falsities have been created. And that's really what we have right now. We're experiencing the reversal of the artificial forms of life or false activities now under pressure.
Now, what precipitated the tightening, do you suppose? Why did Greenspan decide that things had gone too far?
Well, the usual stuff with central bank, as always, that they're starting to fear that there was going to be inflation, right? And the way they measure inflation, the consumer price index or whatever. So initially, he lowered the interest rates because if he was fearing deflation. Later, Bernanke joined the board. Bernanke encouraged Greenspan to a large extent to avoid deflation. So he said, well, we're going to buy insurance and we lower interest rate to 1%. Once they started to realize that the consumer price index is not collapsing any longer, and so not falling sharply, and they said, well, that's fine. I mean, we already achieved our task, and there's no need to push more money. So therefore, we maybe ought to tighten a little bit. And that's really how they're usually doing things. And the economy started to do a little bit better in terms of GDP, of course. And it appeared to be everything okay. Therefore, I said, well, there's no need to loosen so much. We'll have to take back all the liquidity we have given to the economy. You know, we'll take it back. And Greenspan made the assumption, they always make the assumption, if you put the money, it won't have any effect. And if you take the money, it still won't have any effect. They're playing some kind of neutrality, you know. Right. Now, they make a distinction between money and liquidity as if it's really there's any difference. Liquidity and money is the same thing, but they label it differently all the time. And they say, we pump liquidity, that's it. Now we take the liquidity out, no effect whatsoever on the economy for them.
Well, it's the old monetarist story, right? Neutral money, money in, money out, what does it matter? It doesn't affect the capital stock, it doesn't affect the shape of investment.
That's right. I mean, even Friedman, who was a little bit smart and all that, would say, all right, you know, in the short term, maybe we can have it, you know, but it's not really important. I mean, over time, it's basically money is it won't have much effect, you know, and particularly rational expectation completely removed all this importance of money altogether, you know, and they would say expectation will adjust everything.
Right.
Bingo, and so money became really not important issue altogether.
Yeah, the efficient market hypothesis, everything is going on is exactly right. All the time.
That's right, and everything adjusts quickly, and that's the problem with all these models, because you know, like if you assume that money is non-neutral and it operates sort of starts with the lags, which Friedman incidentally was accepting the time lags, but for him lags were quite mechanical, and he didn't really elaborate why they're time lags, as opposed to Mises. Mises really said it clearly that money starts at a particular point. And the effect goes from one individual to another individual, from one market to another market, and that's really the beauty about all that, you know, because that's really exactly how market really work. You know, you can see that money in a financial market, every dealer will tell you, money goes from one asset to another asset. Really, that's clear non-neutrality of money.
It's remarkable to think that the whole thing is a surprise in some ways to central bankers and to people that follow these markets so carefully and closely and are in charge, but not entirely a surprise to people like you who are well-schooled in the theory.
Well, I mean, we all basically have indebted to Mr. Mises for giving us all the knowledge, put it this way, and of course, Mario Rosbart, you know, But I believe that some other people, like, you know, in the market players, were not versed in Austrian economics, but intuitively they're actually responding to the and getting to the same result. In fact, I mean, you know, I read, you know, in various financial commentators, and some of them reaching the right conclusions, although they cannot articulate as, let's say, the Austrians are doing it. Put it this way.
Now, we've got Congress rejecting the bailout package, which you don't suppose was going to do any good, right? You wrote that it was actually going to prolong the problems.
Yeah.
So we've got Congress rejecting that. They may or may not approve it. But what's the central bank doing now to patch things up, and what are going to be the effects of that?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, today, for instance, Fed. Fed got so many tools today. I'm actually surprised that the Fed they actually made the announcement of this package, because, you know, they can bypass the package easily. Bernanke already yesterday pushed 700 billion in the market, you know, in terms of money pumping, right? So they can, even if the Congress, let's say, would not approve the package, you know, Bernanke almost got all the tools. He still waits for another tool to get the approval from the Congress to pay interest on deposits, banks that bank hold with the Fed. And he can pump at liberty today. So for all the intent and purposes, the package is more just, they introduce it just for psychology's sake rather than anything else to say how we're doing something. We try to save you. But there's no need for that. Bernanke got all the means to do it.
When you say pumping money, the normal analysis would say that this is going to result in inflation, but you disagree with that.
Well, the interesting thing is that until today, there are two things to this. Until today, Bernanke made the impression that he pumps, right? But he still was lacking one tool, which prevented him to expand money supply, which is the balance sheet of the Fed, so to speak, which is the interest rate target. Because the way the interest rate target operates, it prevents the Fed at the same time to maintain the target and expend money at liberty. So
the Fed have to obey the target?
Well, it doesn't have to, because they're saying, well, that's the our policy right now. So in order to carry credibility, they will say, okay, we're setting the target, and the reason why we're setting the target because we believe where the interest rate level of interest rate should be, because the underlying philosophy of the interest rate targeting is that they try to hit the so-called the neutral interest rates, where everything is instead of equilibrium and everything is hunky-dory and balanced. So the moment you sort of don't abide by the target you set, it means that you don't really know where you're going. So in terms of credibility, they have to sort of play the game. But in action terms, there's no need for that. The Bank of Japan decided not to target anything and to sort of like lower the interest rate to zero, right? And after the event, they said, well, the target will be zero right now, right? But Bernanke doesn't want to have federal funds rate at zero at the moment. But right now, last week at least, we had, and I presume also yesterday, federal funds rate already fell to zero, right? You know, so they basically not when it needed, they may not play the target.
Okay. So what are they planning with this deposit, paying interest on deposit plan?
Well, with the interest rate on deposit, it works as following. What will happen is now, if for instance, let's say the interest rate target today it's 2%, the federal funds rate target. And if Bernanke decides to push money, let's say 400 billion just like that, how he does it? By buying assets from the financial markets like treasury bonds. It injects money into the system. The interest rate will fall to below 1%, to below 2%, could fall to zero. So obviously he said, well, the federal open market operation automatically says, well, we have the open market desk at New York said, well, we have the target, and to maintain the target, that's what our job is. So they'll all try to offset it by immediately taking money out of the system. In other words, by basically selling assets to the market, and so at the end of the day, there won't be much effect on the money supply, and actually was the game, was the situation until now. So Bernanke said, look, because he's a monetarist and he likes to pump money effectively, also he said, look, I need to have the unlimited capacity to print money to expand my balance sheet. The balance sheet of the Fed. And the only way I can do it, if I'll be able, let's say, two things. One is if the government will start issuing debt, for instance, then it can help me. By issuing debt, the government will create pressure on the interest rate market, on the Fed funds market, because the government will absorb cash from the public. And once the interest rates will start going above the target, then I can actually pump money because I have to suppress the interest rate going above the target. Then it's good for me. And that's really how Bernanke was monetizing the how the debts get monetized, put it this way. But now, if we have a situation where Treasury is not issuing debt, and I would like to have my flexibility regardless of what Treasury does, because Treasury already got very high debt, and it's not always possible to ask them to create more debt. So the easiest way is to print money. How do we do it? Let's pay interest to banks. Banks are holding their reserves and some of the money they need to settle checks with the central bank, with the Fed. Right now, the Fed doesn't pay them any interest. So now if the Fed will start paying interest, let's say the interest the same as the target, let's say 2% at the moment, then when the Fed will pump money, there won't be any incentive for the banks that in the various banks to lend to each other in the Fed funds market, because the moment you pump money, the Fed funds rate will fall to below to the target. But if you offer them the rates of a target, why would you lend below the target? So first of all, nobody will lend because everybody knows that we can get the money without doing anything, just to sit on cash. Second, why lend even? By lending, you're incurring some risk. So that's really the solution now. You're paying them interest on deposit, and they'll sit on liquidity. And that's how Bernanke believes he will be able to pump money or expand its balance sheet, which is true. But the point is now, that's to your second question, will it create inflation? Well, this is dependent very much on what money will do next. Because as Mises suggested, money has to move from one market to another market, and et cetera, et cetera. And will this money move? And that's where the bank lending is coming into the game. Because if banks will not lend, because bank may sit on the cash forever, ever, and that's what they did during Great Depression, because the risk is too high. They don't really know whether the lending will end up in bad assets or good assets. And given the fact that they have accumulated so many bad assets, they probably will not lend at all. And that's really the observation that Murray Rothbard made in his various writings, that during Great Depression, banks have chosen not to lend because the risk of accumulating bad assets was far too high. So they were sitting on massive reserves. And that's what is developing right now. We also have a good testimony to all this, what happened in Japan in 2001 and 2002. Bank of Japan has pumped to the bank's deposits money at the pace of almost 300% at one stage. Mm-hmm. And the banks didn't lend there, and lending continued to collapse. So I presume that similar things will happen here. So therefore, the overall, if lending will not increase, then we can actually conclude that this will not be inflationary, what Bernanke is going to do. But later on, it may explode because one of these days, money, the economy will start going ahead, and then we may end up in a serious trouble.
So once you end the credit crunch, then the inflation begins.
That's right. I mean, because the banks will see also so much liquidity. I mean, eventually it will have to go. But initially, I mean, if they won't lend, and things are very paralyzed, so nothing's going to happen in this sense.
That's something we need to. Well, it's a difficult proposition because on one hand, downward pressure on prices would be a good thing right now, right? I mean, that's a saving grace for consumers, and the credit crunch will force that.
Yeah, I mean, the fall in prices and this is part of the adjustment is a great thing because prices do not cause anything, as some people believe it. You know, it just it brings things to some perspective. The facts of reality. The reality is that we're not as rich as we thought we are. You know, we're much poorer than we believed we are. And that's really what prices are really are indicating also to us. Yeah. So it's good to have this adjustment that at least we'll live in the reality rather than an illusion.
But meanwhile, while this is happening, you've got banks accumulating massive reserves and preparing for the next round of lending, and then that's when the danger hits. That's when the inflation takes off.
Yeah, I mean that's exactly where they're exactly right. I mean once things will start improving and they're sitting on massive ability to amplify all that, that's where the trouble will start.
Yeah. Is this what happened to prices in Japan? Which you're making a close analogy between the U.S. and Japan here. What was the Japanese experience?
Well, it's actually the Japanese experience took a long time for the prices to move, but they started gradually to move also. I mean, the interesting thing in Japan that Japan has never recovered since the early 90s. I mean, because they allowed the zombies activities, that's what the various politicians really want in America, to stay alive. And so nothing really, it's all paralyzed there, in fact. I mean, the economy there, they never recovered. And the lending hardly moved either there. So that's why, I mean, it moved a little bit here and there for a short, brief period of time. So the price inflation gone up a little bit, but nothing really to write home about, put it this way. So because nothing really happened there. It's still in a paralyzed state.
Yeah, because they did not let the liquidation take place.
They didn't. You see, they kept all the zombies alive. I mean, for the last 20 years, I mean, and that's really what you have. You know, and that's really what the guys in America are saying. Well, let's keep everybody happy. I mean, how can you do it?
Yeah, right. Eventually, these bad debts are going to have to be washed out one way or the other in order for economic recovery to take place.
Exactly right. I mean, that's the way I understand it. And that's how I believe Mises understood that he was saying that recession, whatever we call recession, is the first stages for recovery. And that it enables the good activities to take over and start to build up capital and start to move ahead. Because, every businessman understands it. That's really what surprises me on a micro level. Everybody understands the logic of this. But all of a sudden, on a macro level, somehow they're getting confused, which really beyond me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So until this liquidation occurs, we can expect a long period of recession. But is there a way that we can, that federal policy can assist in making the liquidation more orderly? You know, some people are arguing this, that, look, everything's moving too quickly. We need a little bit, some monetary injections, maybe the congressional bailout, whatever, as a way of softening the blow.
Well, I mean, all those things sound sort of appealing psychologically, but I think it's all false. For the reason being very simple, because when you say, well, let's delay it a little bit, it means let's continue to support those zombies for a little bit longer. That's really what it means. And the longer you keep them, the worse it's going to be for the recovery. I mean, when in the UK, for instance. They basically don't bail them out. They say we nationalize them. That's the same thing what in the U.S. they want to do, not to nationalize. But if you nationalize, you still basically give resources to those activities which are not supposed to be there any longer.
I mean,
because real activities are still channeled to them, real resources.
What you're saying is that it is impossible to fight price trends. And yet that's what the political class and the class of central bankers is attempting to do.
Yeah, they basically try to defy the reality that somebody is insolvent and there's no way it can become profitable. And they're basically gambling. They say, maybe this activity will become profitable if I'll wait for another 1,000 years, after 1,000 years it'll be profitable. I mean, in the meantime, it kills all the other guys. I mean, who can really deliver goods and make things makes a hell of a difference for our life.
Yeah. What is the? Can you say a few words about the international impact of what's going on in the U.S. right now?
Well, the international impact is that most large banks were all involved in this. They all were involved in this whole monetary systems. Every central bank copies the Federal Reserve. I mean, so everybody is coordinating and with everybody else. So there are some certain time lags, but on balance, they all pumped a hell of a lot of money. They started to tighten in the different degrees, and now they're all in the phase of economic bust right now. You know, that's what you see in Europe, that's what you see in the UK, and that's what you may start seeing in countries like Australia. And also in the Southeast Asian economies, it gradually will hit there. And in particular, China. China created a lot of good things because it moved away from communism. But then for every plus, they also created a lot of minuses by pushing a lot of money, creating a lot of false activities. So they have created a lot of wealth, but they're also squandering it now very rapidly, started to squander it.
But you work at Man Financial, and you're one of the economists there, and I presume there are others, right? And probably they don't all agree with you, right?
Well, I mean, most people don't agree with me. Yeah,
but I was thinking the other day, you know, that it's interesting. You watch the television news, and now suddenly the bears that have been with, you know, various firms of one sort or another are now emerging, saying, "Look, I told you so." But it occurred to me that it must be very difficult in times, in boom times, to be a bear, because everybody's saying, look, your forecasts are not correct. Look at the stock market, it's soaring, everything's going great, and all you do is sit over there in the corner and complain, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, so the solution to this is, I found a solution that during the bull market, for instance, you don't emphasize too much the structural issues that we right now witnessing. And you sort of try to pay attention to liquidity, monetary liquidity, which Mises and Austrian economics gives you a lot of plenty of tools for that, to evaluate the market movement on a short-term basis. And I found that with Austrian economics, you can also cater for even for bull markets. And many Austrians making the mistake during bull market, they're only focusing on the structural issues, which is correct. But they don't happen in the short term. That's the problem.
Right. So you have actually called these short term price movements very, very quickly. As I think back to it now, for 5 years, you have had both long term articles, long term forecasts, and short term forecasts.
That's right. That's right. And so using the money supply, for instance, using the Austrian methods to evaluate what money is, you can do quite well in terms of assessing a short-term movement also. But I believe that ultimately what helps good analysis is the correct theory. And I think at the bottom line, you know, theory is very important. And then you, with theory, you try to read the data. But when people only look at the data and try to extract theory from that, that's where the problem starts.
Now, are you resisting the temptation to run around and say, I told you so?
I never do this. One has to be humble in this, you know, because it's very dangerous. I mean, very dangerous.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, even though, I mean, the people who are correct about the housing boom and everything, I mean, nobody really likes those people even now, right?
No, they don't, because you see, if you're bullish, let's say during bull market, and you're right, then you'll be they'll be praised and you'll be worshipped. Now, if you're wrong, they won't do anything to you because you were bullish, right, in the bull market, let's say. But if you're bearish and you're right, you know, they'll say, oh, well, big deal. I mean, so they won't touch you, but you know, it's not a big deal. But if you're wrong, they'll fire you, basically. You know?
Well, thank you for being so frank with us over the years. You know, I mean, it's been a great help to our readership. Are you interested in having some more of these conversations? Because I think these are a great benefit to people.
Yeah, I'm happy to do it.